There's no doubt, but youth is a fine thing, though my own is not over yet, and wisdom comes with age. I'm a boy who was born and bred in the Great Blasket, a small, truly Gaelic island which lies northwest of the coast of Kerry, where the storms of the sky and the wild sea beat without ceasing from end to end of the year and from generation to generation against the wrinkled rocks. I remember well when I was 4 years old, I was in the town of Dingle in the care of a stranger woman, because I was only half a year old when my mother died, dear God bless her soul, so there was no one to take care of me. I had two brothers and two sisters, but at that time they had little more sense than myself. So, as I've said, my father sent me to Dingle to be cared for by a woman there. Very great indeed was the control that was over us, for there were many others like me. We had a great dislike for school, but that is not one man's disease, in my opinion. The schoolmistress teaching us was a woman who was as grey as a badger with two tusks of teeth hanging down over her lip. And if she wasn't cross, it isn't day yet. She was the devil itself, or so I thought. I remember the first day I went to school. Peg de Roche brought me, holding my hand. "Oh," she would say, "it's to a nice place I'll take you today. Are there any sweets there?" "There are, and plenty." She was forever coaxing me that way. Shyly I sat on the bench alongside of Peg. There were many, many children there. Then the mistress noticed me and beckoned me to go up to her. "Go up now," says Peg. "She's forgiving you the sweets." Well, I had the drowning man's grip of Peg for fear of the mistress. "Leave go of me," said she. Shamefaced, I stood before the mistress. "Who are you, and what is your name?" "They call me Morris." "Morris what?" said she sourly. Morris," said I again, my voice trembling. "All right," said she. She went to a cupboard and took out a big tin and put it down before me. Then I saw a sight which put gladness into my heart. Sweets in the shape of a man, a pig, a boat, a horse, and many another. When I had taken my choice, she gave me a book and put me sitting on the bench again. "Be a good boy now," said she. So there I sat contentedly, looking at the book, while not forgetting to fill my mouth. I was going to school every day from that out. But it was not long before the sweets and Peg's gentleness began to grow cold. So I became disgusted with school. The seven tasks of the mountain on me, as I thought, when I was carrying my bag of books, and obliged to learn this and that. Before long, it seemed to me there was nobody in the world that had a worse life than myself. One morning, Mickle, Dick, and I set out slow and heavy-hearted for school. As we went, what did I see up through the passage but a man and two women looking at me and smiling? They came straight towards me, but I was afraid of them, and I began to run. I ran on till I lay down in a hole behind the gate where I found a way of peeping at them through a chink. I could see Mickle there, and they talking to him, and I was not long peeping when I saw them giving him an apple and an orange. With that, I didn't give a second glance, but back I ran as hard as I could. One of the women came over to me. "I'm your aunt," says she, taking me up in her arms and kissing me. The other woman did the same. "That's another aunt, too," said the first woman. "And this is your uncle," says she, pointing to the man who was standing behind us. With that, the man spoke out in Irish, for he had no knowledge of English. "What sort of talk is that, man?" said I. "That's Irish. What's Irish?" "Oh, wait now," says she, "till you go home. That's the time you'll have the Irish." "Where is my home? We have no Irish at all in this home here." "This is not your home, Morris, but the Blasket." But I was as blind to what she was saying about the Blasket as the herring leaping in the Bay of Dingle. "Your father is for coming out the next day to take you home. Would you like that, Morris?" "Has my father sweets at home?" said I, after devouring a fine apple. "Oh, he has indeed, and everything else." After a while she let me down. Then they all kissed me, gave a farewell and a blessing to the two of us, and went away.
"Oh, Mickle," said I, "we're forgetting. What about school? The devil take us, let us make haste."
Off we ran as hard as we could until we reached the school. We were an hour late. Heavily and unwillingly we stood before the mistress.
"Where were ye? What kept ye so late?" she said sourly.
"We weren't in any place," said I, "but when we were coming to school we met some kinsfolk of mine and they kept us talking."
"Isn't it a fine excuse you make up? Go out now and cut a good fat rod and bring it in to me, me good boy. I won't hear any more of your blather."
I went out and I cut the worst rod I could find and brought it into her.
"Stretch out your hand."
I did, and I got it hard. 3 blows on each hand she gave me before she was done, and Mickle the same. Then she took us to the far end of the school. There were 2 posts there on which we're accustomed to drill. She tied one of us to each post.
We were there about a half an hour when there was a knock at the door.
The mistress leapt up from her chair and began walking to and fro without any sense. We were tied too fast for her to release us in a hurry. The knock was made again sharply. Who was there but the parish priest?
"It is with us now, my boy," I whispered to Mickle. "You'll soon see sport."
The priest walked in, a tin of sweets in his hand, as was the way with him, and he began talking to the children. The mistress was as white as death.
"The devil take you," said Mickle. "Do you see the look on the mistress?"
It is then we had the bright smiles. It wasn't long before the priest was asking where were Mickle and Morris.
"Here we are, father," said we in one voice.
He came over to us looking knives.
"Oh, what is the meaning of this?" said he. "Who tied ye here?"
"The mistress, father," said I.
"Why?" "I will tell you, father. When Mickle and I were coming to school, we met some kinsfolk of mine, and they kept us talking the way we were an hour late."
He beckoned to the mistress to come down.
"What is this you're after doing to the poor little children?"
"Oh, father, I beg your pardon. I was for putting a little fear into them."
"Look, father," said I, showing him my hands, which were blistered with the blows.
"Oh, my shame," said the priest. Then turning to the mistress,
"I will make short delay," said he, "of putting you out of the school if you go on with this work. Untie them at once. And if I find that you set hands on them again, you will have news to tell." One winter's night, very wild, with the patter of snow on the window panes, the wind blowing with a lonely whistle among the trees, an ass braying far away with the coldness of the night, and myself stretched out in the flat of my back in a fine cosy bed, I was thinking and ever thinking of the blasket. When would the day come when I would be a man, free from the control of the matrons, no school to sicken me and the mistress beating me no more? Then the snow driving against the windowpane would put the island out of my head, and I could hear with pity the poor ass braying in the distance. "Oh, if I were where you are now, my Aisling," said I to myself, "isn't it I would be terrified of the pooka?"
Before long I was dreaming that Mickle, Dick and I were walking through a fine green meadow, gathering flowers. When we had gathered our fill of them, we sat down, talking of school and Brie Le Bleu, and as is the habit of children. After a while it seemed that Mickle fell asleep. While I sat thinking what a strange thing was that sleep, what would I see come out of his mouth but a pretty white butterfly? It began to walk down over his body. Down went the butterfly through the meadow, I after it ever and ever till he came to an iron gate. When it came to the top of the gate, down it went on the other side. I stood watching every turn it was taking. It came down into another meadow where there was an old skull of a horse. In went the butterflies through the holes of the eyes, I still watching intently.
It must have been 5 minutes before I saw it coming out again through the mouth of the skull. Back it came to the gate, up each bar and down the other side, just as it had done before. And then up through the meadow, I following it ever and ever till it went back into Mickle's mouth. At that moment he awoke. "Where am I?" said he, looking round. "Don't you know the place?" said I, not letting on to him at all about the butterfly. "Oh, Morris," said he, "sit down till I tell you the fine dream I'm after having. Would you believe it? I dreamt we went astray in each other when we were gathering the flowers, and that I walked on for a long, long way till I came to some railway tracks which crossed each other like the threads of a stocking. I didn't know in the world where I was. When I came to the end of the railway line, I saw a big, bright house. I went up to it. There was a big round doorway with no door in it. I stopped and looked. Well, in I went. But if so, there was no one alive or dead to be seen. I was passing from room to room, but upon my word, Morris, my fill of fear was coming over me. 'Twas no wonder for you. I was groping my way ever and ever till at last I reached the doorway. And the divil if I didn't come back again over the same railway tracks. And just as I find myself in the meadow again, I awoke. "Safe be your story, teller," said I. "It seems," I said, looking up at the sun, "when a man dreams, a white butterfly does be after coming out of his mouth and walking away. And when it comes back again, it is then he awakes."
"Why do you say that?" says Mickle.
"Because I saw it coming out of your own mouth when you were asleep, and it walked down through the meadow, up through that gate below, and from there into the old skull of a horse in the field beyond. Out it came again, up through the same place, and back into your mouth. It was then you awoke, and as sure as you're alive, that was the big house you were in."
At that moment, I was awakened by a shout of laughter. There was Mickle beside me, bursting his sides to hear the way I was talking in my sleep. We got up, made ready for school, and went away. And I spent that day without learning anything but telling my dream to Mickle.